see you coming back in here with duck knee jerseys. I want to see you coming back in here with bloodstained jerseys.
How could anybody go and sit and have a pint with those boys after that?
And the referee is looking around and acting as Mickey.
Tell the children to play tennis or something.
If they want to play tennis, go and play tennis.
Hello, how's the form? Welcome to the Three Men We with the Boys at AGA podcast. Morris Brosnan here, delighted to be joined by Mick and Mark as usual. Mark, how's the form?
Oh, very good, Morris, very, very good.
And yourself, Mick?
Yeah. Not great.
Why so? You seem down.
Well, why wouldn't I be? Saturday night, Clare hammered to Kerry as expected. Then Sunday, you go out and say, right, you'll make up for it in the hurling. And they go out and they're embarrassed by Tipperary. And just what's the point? It's lashing rain all day.
It's good that we're keeping with that whole positive podcast and not be moaning straight away, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. We're going to start things off by totally changing the point of this podcast. This is no longer a GA podcast. This is a Keane Mackey appreciation podcast.
And so it should be.
I can get behind that. Yeah, okay. I'm in now. I'm alive again.
Sunday reminded me of some of the best GA analysis I've ever heard, which was, you know, the old pen picks you see in match programs, especially in the round county final season, where it's like favourite food, all this. And one of the lines was, you know, the best piece of advice you've ever been given. And Podge McGahern, Keane Mackey's club mate from Castlerahan, was interviewed a couple of years ago, headed the Cavan senior final. And in the programme was like, best piece of advice you've ever been given. Pass it to Mac.
Didn't do the money.
True word spoken.
We'll get back to that in a minute, but we're going to talk about more than Cavan. Most of you will be glad to hear. We will have
Armagh too.
We're going to do our usual preview show at the end of the week, so you can keep an eye out for that. But this is a review in last weekend's action. We'll hear from Owen Murphy later on, and we'll look back at all the weekend's hurling. But Cavan, Mark, you enjoyed Sunday.
I don't want to talk about my experience on Sunday, well, just yet. I probably will talk about that in a minute, but I want to talk about instead Pierre. I don't know if his name is Pierre, but I'm going to call him Pierre. Pierre, a 17-year-old Frenchman who somehow found himself in Clonus on Sunday. Mm-hmm. Now, one of my friends was telling me that he was going to go to the game with us, but he said, no, I make my own way down. I'm going to a double chop vintage show, first of all. A double chop. For those of you who don't know, it's the old way of cutting silage. So it's like harvester being pulled by a tractor, basically. Not the self-propelled things that look like combine harvesters now. And some lad in Louth organises a double, I think he just wants a silage cut for free. All these people bring old double chop and single chop harvesters, and people come look at them cut silage, basically. So there was a few of them going down to that. I don't think they made it in the end. Whatever happened, anyway, they ended up coming into Clonus before the game. Now, for those who don't know Clonus, Clonus is basically a giant crossroads. There's about 15 roads coming into it, and everybody converges on this one road or street, which is basically the main street of Clonus, towards St. Tiernach's Park. Everyone's coming walking down that street. It's lined with pubs. Any colour piece you've ever read about the Ulster final is always like that. And the Paragon is obviously the big pub at the top of the street. So a friend, anyway, we call him Jimmy, is arriving into Clonus, and he's with a gang of other lads who are obviously all from a farming background, given that they were going to the double chop day. And they spot another farmer from Monaghan, from just out the road from Clonus, and he's standing outside the Paragon with this very tanned young lad who was just standing alongside him. And they meet up with your man anyway, and they're chatting away, what's the crack? And then one of them eventually goes, what's the story with this? Who's your mate? Who's this lad? And your man's there, like, whatever. This is Pierre. So Pierre, if anyone who knows any Irish agricultural students, ag science or whatever, will know that they go on these trips abroad as part of their course. They go, you know, some people might go to New Zealand, others get brought out to the middle, you know, they go to America, others go to the south of France. Pierre has been sent to Clonus.
So
Pierre's there as an award of English. My friend Jimmy starts going, bonjour Pierre. He's like, oh, bonjour, ça va, blah, 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 blah. And Jimmy says, all right, right, I don't know anything that's that saying. And one of them, someone goes to Jimmy, tell me, Jimmy, is he any good of a drinker? And Jimmy, the lad from that had him, the lad that was kind of keeping him, what do you call him, his boss.
Minding him.
Yeah, minding him, his chaperone. And then he was there, oh, Jesus, I wouldn't have a clue. Sure, money after to collect them off the plane this morning. So, has arrived in a foreign land. 1 minute, he's sitting on the banks of the Seine, sipping wine and eating grapes. And the next minute, he's standing with a load of Armagh lads, one side of him, letting off flares and chanting, "We hate Tyrone." And a load of old Cavan lads sat on the other side of him, going, "Would you let in your fuckers?" he has no clue what's going on, the poor lad. So, can you imagine what it must have been like for him in the last couple of minutes of that game at extra time, with Gavin coming back at the place that if there was there used to be a roof on Clonus, I think it might have been lifted off it on Sunday.
Clonus might as well have been the centre of the world. I was at a festival this weekend, and a friend of mine was home from Johannesburg, huge Liverpool fan, was home from Johannesburg, was dead nervous for the game, and then was in on Saturday and was randomly saw some fella looking at his phone, so nodded over and said, "What's the score?" And your man nodded back to him. He said, "We're winning easy." And he's like, "Wait, what are you talking about?" Your man was from Kerry and was a mad Kerry fan and thought that naturally that anybody who was going to ask him about the score was asking about that.
I was going to say, 1-0 Liverpool wasn't all that easy.
No. It's funny you're talking about people like fish out of water at the games and all, because I didn't get to go to Ennis yesterday because I had to work, so I was watching it on telly, and but unfortunately I was spammed basically on Twitter by Lord Ashcroft.
I saw that, yeah.
Tory peer who for some reason was in Ennis and went to the game and made a big deal of it. I have no idea how I got dragged into it, because I didn't engage with it once, but for a bit, and still to this day people are talking about his comparison between the €15 ticket into Cusack Park in Ennis versus the €600 he apparently paid to go to the Champions League final the night before. And I have to say to him, I'm the biggest hurling acolyte and advocate you'll find in the world, but I think he got better value at the Champions League final.
So what, you were just like tagged in his tweet?
Somebody replied to him and said, "You're very welcome," and tagged me and balls.ie in it, to which I decided I wanted nothing to do with this particular story. But to this, yeah, I'm still hearing a lot about it in my Twitter mentions. I'm basically avoiding my phone
at
the moment.
You're the resident Clare fan, that's why you got
seemingly
tagged.
Yeah. So he was welcoming Lord Ashcroft to Ennis on behalf of all Clare people, and indeed the Clare media, to which I ignored.
You'd be sent out to
that
welcome.
Particular welcome.
You'd be sent out to welcome Donald Trump to Clare next.
Oh, I'll welcome him. I'll welcome him with open arms.
The game itself, right, Mark? I want your opinion on this, because we've spoken at length in this podcast about flyers and the evolution of cornerbacks, and the fact that cornerbacks are now basically your new wing forwards, and that they're constantly getting forward. And the old 90s style cornerback who just marked his man and dogged into him off the ball and towed the line as close as possible was virtually extinct. Step forward, James Morgan, who did everything he possibly could to bring back the old school cornerbacks. He was actually amazing. His ability to foul so repeatedly and not be booked for it was one of the best performances. And not only like blatant fouls in terms of literally crashing into McVitie, who we'll talk about later, but just totally crashing into him, fouling him, as we pre-mentioned, but never really getting booked until he was eventually hauled off after 20 minutes.
Yeah, this is one of those things where Morgan was obviously handpicked to man-mark Darren McVitie. In the first 20 minutes, he must have fouled him 5 times. Yeah. And it was one of those, he eventually got a yellow card, but it was a challenge worthy of a yellow card, if that makes sense. And he should have been given he should have been given a yellow card previously to that for cumulative fouls. And I think he got a yellow card for cumulative fouls at that stage. So that should have been a second.
But sure, technically you're only allowed 2 fouls in your book, aren't you? Like, isn't it a ticking and a book? Is that in football as well?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you are. Like, a referee's supposed to book you after 2 or 3 fouls.
You don't get ticked if it's like, you know, you're going for the ball or if it's something like that. But like Morgan, he must have fouled McVitie every time he got the ball before he was taken off. I think maybe there was one time he didn't foul him, but it was Matt. So I don't know if he'd class that as a good call. He obviously came back, started extra time, came back on and had a good display then. But I don't know if you'd call it a cornerback masterclass.
Yeah, is that old school cornerbacking though, just fouling? Like, surely there's more to it than that. It's been a sticky, take a guy out of a game performance.
I agree with you, but the thing, when I was thinking about it in hindsight, like, if I was looking at that game, I would hate for for James Morgan to be marking me, because I can only imagine what he's doing to you off the ball and how close he was constantly on top of McVitie. Now McVitie is like fully committed to trying to get away from him and bring him everywhere, but he has him stuck beside, like Morgan Munders are throwing a saddle over McVitie. He was with him every single step of the way, right? And he actually is able to do the other stuff, the stuff that we talked about in terms of getting forward, because he came on early against Down and the very first thing he did was score an outrageous points. But I guess his brief there was just stick with McVitie, don't do anything else, just take him on there. The best was right after giving away five fouls, being yellow carded and then being taken off, he ran over to Geezer to ask him why he'd taken him off in the first place, as if he didn't understand it.
I suppose there's that thing of people automatically assume, actually Killian Brady, who was a sub for Cavan on Sunday and usually like has been starting through the years, he's one of those where he comes on every game, he's guaranteed to get a yellow card. It's almost a sure bet. And then people take him off, but like you wonder, like sometimes lads are on yellow cards, they know themselves, they're not idiots. Like they'll go, I'm going to play on the line here, then oh, I'm yellow, I'm in danger here, I'm not going to
yeah, although jump in. My experience is that managers wait until they have two really dodgy fouls after the yellow card and are so blessed, yeah, by a really lenient referee, and they're going, he's not going to fucking stop here again.
But they, like, it was interesting, there were a couple of very interesting defensive displays, especially Amar did go defensive on Sunday, and like there were a few lads like that. Like, I mean, they then put Minister of the Dark Arts Mark Shields on McVitie and they had a good tussle then after that. I thought Aidan Forker, I don't know if maybe there might have been something wrong with Martin Riley. I couldn't really understand why Cavan persisted with having him stuck up in the corner forward position, for he went centre half back for extra time and touched the ball more times in the first few minutes of extra time than he seemed to do in the previous 70 minutes. And Forker actually was on him, was having a great game, and it was interesting on BBC because they took him off with about 10 minutes to go in the game, and Mark McHugh and co-commentary straight away said, like, why are they taking Forker off? He's been very good. Like, Martin Riley could do something. And it was during Cavan kick out, and literally that kick out, Martin Riley caught it. Like, I've never seen something come to fruition straight away. They're like, should they not be leaving him out of Martin Riley? Straight away he got involved in the game.
So the way Armagh set up, right, was that they were going to play this huge mass of bodies slightly deeper than they normally play. So they weren't actually, like, these players were dropping back. You have players like Jamar Hall, who I'm a big fan of. The point he's kicked was one of the scores of the game. It was absolutely outrageous. Them kind of dropping slightly deeper, basically trying to press up high the same way kind of Kerry do with one or two forwards up there. But once you beat that initial press, especially off kickouts, you have to build up slowly. Now that makes sense, because as we talked about last week, if Cavan were to move the ball quickly inside to Riley or McVitie, then they could bypass that initial. But if they're dropping back with the play and you're forced to build up slowly by kicking a short kick out, which Armagh effectively gave them, then you're allowed to build up that way. You know, like, the commentary seemed baffled by the idea that they're going to surrender a kick out and allow Cavan this kind of build up.
Yeah.
But they're doing it deliberately. It was to stop Cavan being able to go long and go past that. So McVitie was so important to that, as trying to be an outlet, which is why I guess Morgan was so sticky with him. And it comes back to a conversation we've had before in hurling as well, is that marking job has totally changed. Oftentimes about putting him on a back foot. But when you do see, not that Morgan necessarily is the best example, when you do see that kind of ability to totally take him out of the game just entirely, that's probably the best example of, you know, your classic cornerback that we spoke about earlier.
Yeah, a cornerback. It's cornerback, like, if you want to get an example from the hurling this weekend, like Cottle Barrett, like, you know, a lot has been made of Brendan Maher, his man marking job on Tony Kelly, which is rightly so. Like, it was absolutely brilliant. And that's kind of more about the second thing Mark was talking about there, you know, about Martin Riley and when coming out the field. And, you know, but the situation with Cottle Barrett on Shane O'Donnell was, like, they took out Clare's form guy, put the best cornerback in him, back to his proper position, back to proper form, and just took him out of the game. And I was saying to you earlier, is like, the best cornerback performance is one you don't really notice.
Yeah.
Because they just haven't let any space and the ball doesn't really go to them. It's like a corner in American football. You know, it's like Revis Island was the kind of famous one for, like, you know, that you just don't throw the ball there. You don't throw the ball to Sherman when he was on the Seahawks, you know, and his side of the field was basically just off limits, and everybody went the other way, and it just took away half the field. And that's what I thought Barrett did at the weekend. He was brilliant, I have to say. And he just kind of, when Clare's forwards were just getting so little, it just killed the spirit. And then the further Tip got ahead, the more Clare realised, you know, there's no real way back here, and it just turned into a hammering when it didn't really start out that way. Like,
and even, you know, like, it's funny thinking about this in the Galway context against Wexford. Like, there's been a real obsession with particularly in hurling, I think, a player's been, you know, so effective on both sides of the ball that, you know, you need a guy to be just more than like a good man marker, which is why Galway dropped both their cornerbacks from last year, this year, and brought in two new young guys. And then eventually Wexler started, you know, overrunning them basically and coming really back into the game, if I say them, and they brought back on Hambry, and yeah, he totally stemmed it, totally stopped the defensive. And it's like, sometimes that can be enough and let the rest of it happen beyond that. Like, you don't need your cornerback doesn't have to hit 4 points, you know. They could, if they do their own defensive job in itself, that can be better than having an okay defender who's also a good hurler.
It can depend on the player as well. Like, you know, if you look at someone, like, you know, you look at, and it depends on maybe the style of play that you have. You would think like a team like Donegal, you probably need to be able to do both. You know, like in with
the way they play.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly. You need to be able to get involved in the game, but not every team is like that. And you can, I think it's been a little bit fluid and known that, you know, you want your best players there, and ultimately your cornerback should probably be a stopper first, and then if they can do the other stuff, brilliant. But like, you can't just throw in anybody cornerback because you want to be able to get them involved in overlaps. Like,
oh yeah, 100%. And even if you look at actually another person that we pick out, and he rarely gets highlighted. But has been around now for what, the guts of 10 years, or at least how long has he been, 7 or 8 anyway? Jason McLaughlin for Cavan had another brilliant game at cornerback. I mean, he got a lot more possession than usual because they were conceding the short kick out to him. He was like, every kick out for Cavan was just kicking to Jason McLaughlin left cornerback. But like, Jamie Clark, I think, had one shot from play, and it was that when he tried to chip the goalkeeper off the ground when it came back in. McLaughlin never gave him a kick of it. And again, he did the same against Monaghan, had a brilliant game. And even at the end, actually, the one where Conor Minor conceded that free kick that put Armagh back in front, that was almost a nailed on goal. Like, Jesus, coming bearing down on goals with Jamie Clark one side, Andrew Murnan the other, and somehow McLaughlin perfectly timed it that he committed the player coming running in to give the pass to Clark, but got a hand just to break it, to tip slow it, away, it down, yeah, slightly. So like, he had a stellar performance, and is like, plays as a forward for his club, so he's well able to play ball, but as a man marker first.
The short kick out is an interesting one, right? Because once the option is presented, you can't really not take it. You know, like, Cavan could, like, I think it would have suited Cavan more if they tried to go, we'll do a piece on this during the site about their placements of this and how that affected their build-up. But when they're trying to beat that initial mass of bodies that Armagh have, I think it would have actually suited them to go longer more and maybe aim for
the McKernan. The big problem with that was the wind. You can't really tell it on TV, but there was such it was a gust, because it would blow up one end of the field, and then all of a sudden you'd be looking at the flags and it's blowing the other direction. So it was almost impossible, especially in the first half of Cavan, where they're kicking into the town end. So like, it was really frustrating. It was one of those days where it was just sort of our lads roll, would you let it in, because they were holding it for so long. And I do think they went maybe a little bit more to the extreme. It's one of those things that we were talking about last week, how great it is of, oh, don't take the ball into the tackle and be patient and learn how to break down the blanket defence. But sometimes I wonder, is there a thing now that they see a blanket going back and you're automatically go into that mode where you're like, oh, keep the ball
up, yeah,
rather than actually going, do you know what, maybe sometimes we will just stick it in on Thomas Gallagher or someone inside, see what happens. Like, there was one where, I can't remember who it was, I think it was either Faulkner or Clark, had caught a kick out and they were coming flying up the field with the ball. They met Garode McKiernan coming running the opposite direction at full pace. The hand passed the ball to McKiernan and he just kept running back at full pace the whole, and it's like, you got the ball for the kick out on your own 21 and we're now back in our own 21 and we've actually sprinted to do that up and back, and it's like, what, even looking? So, and also McKiernan seemed to have an off day. I know they picked him out and he got on a lot of ball around midfield, picked him out in the Sunday game, but like, everything he kicked was everything was going wide and he was trying maybe too hard to get into it. I have heard that he apparently got an insect bite during the week. And this mightn't be true at all, but that he'd got an insight.
Sapped him, yeah.
Yeah, that his whole energy was sapped. So, like, again, the next day, he mightn't be kept as quiet. It is interesting, though, that's not the first time that's happened to a Cavan player. Former Cavan and Meath player, Mickey Brennan, missed a match, apparently, for he'd been eaten alive with the midges at training a couple of days before that. And was forced
your
to miss
favorite
a match.
Topic.
Mutant midges up at Cavan.
Speaking of Mickey, actually.
Speaking of Cavan, I'm sick of talking about Cavan.
Did you see the thing of them? Mickey's commentator on Northern Sound, he was doing the Cavan match. Did you see that tweet of him and David Donoghue were doing the match on Sunday? And David wished the very best luck to Monica and Joey, who are out on holidays in Majorca. And Mickey goes, the J is silent in that, Damien. He's like, oh, sorry, best wishes to Monica and Owie, who are out on holidays in Majorca.
say a quick hello to Killian O'Reilly, who's listening in Majorca there with his old pair Nancy and Joey. So I hope you're enjoying the coverage.
The J in that is silent, Damien.
Oh, sorry, it's Nancy and Joey.
As Darren McVitie comes forward with the ball, he was pulled back there at luck.
All right, Mark, I want you to tell me, did you have anything to eat on Sunday?
At the game?
Yeah.
No, I had the dinner before I left. No tea, no dessert, no washing up, straight out the door.
Well, there's been a proposal that a lot of people might have seen on Twitter that I think is interesting, which is a man who wants them to start serving hummus, car sticks and melon slices at the Gaelic grounds in Limerick. So this is a letter sent in to the Limerick leader. People might have seen this on Twitter. He's talking about the GAA's emphasis on trying to be health conscious and the fact that they haven't actually, when they're selling, you know, crisps and New Yorkies and what have you. Kieran Daly actually, funnily enough, talked about this throwing up an interesting enough question, and actually he is taking it quite seriously and wants the GAA to start selling healthier options of snacks rather than Coke, sweets and chocolate bars. He says, as an association, we should be promoting healthy eating and activities. Now, Kieran Daly is a good friend of this podcast, but I want to put a stop to this immediately because I can't tell you how many times I've sat in the cold and rain in Pearse Stadium and the only thing that keeps you going is the thought of curry chips at halftime. So that petition is dead as far as I'm concerned.
The healthiest thing you can get at a GAA match though is a bottle of water, isn't it?
Yeah.
You probably get a banana somewhere too.
I don't think so.
There's a weird basket in them. You feel like they've been there since the late 90s.
Yeah. And also, even if you're not going curry chip, like just a mug of tea and a chocolate bar, like there's some lads there that could be at that game that might be the only chocolate bar they have all week. Farmers, and like they wouldn't know where to even buy them.
That was my subtle whine, is the fact that there been talk about bringing big healthier options into the GAA, but there's time for some not so subtle whines. So once again, we're putting a 30 second clock on these. Mick, I know you're quite keen to get going here.
I don't know, I'm not keen about anything at the moment.
What are we calling them? The 30 second moan? Or Mick's been moaning since the start of the podcast, so he's surely...
I actually haven't moaned.
You've moaned, you've done nothing but moan.
I'm in bad form, I haven't moaned.
You moaned about Top of Cavan, you just moaned there before that.
We talked a lot about Cavan, and they're playing again next week. And you literally went through every person on the team and decided what... You basically did player ratings.
It's a positive moan though.
Let me start on Killian Clark, 9 out of 10.
Right, Mick, sorry.
I would like to talk. Have I started? Sorry, let me start.
I'll count you in. 3, 2, 1.
I would like to talk about the divisiveness that has been going on in the world of GAA over the last couple of weeks. I understand that RTE probably got it wrong with the amount of hurling they picked. But this idea that there's some sort of crystal ball and they knew that all the hurling matches were going to be won by 30 points and that all of the football matches were going to go to extra time that they didn't pick. We talked about this before. There's a clear difference in the layout of the championships, that hurling is top heavy. There is a reason they've picked them. It's not a preference, and I just don't understand why everybody has to be fighting with each other all the time and talking about how one sport is better than the other and one sport, everyone wants to watch this and everyone wants to watch that. Can we not just all get along?
You went over by 10 seconds, but it's a worthwhile conversation, so I'm not going to stop you.
Thanks.
Sorry, Mark. I never ever realised that there was such a hurling people and a football people, to the extent where they were treated as competitors, like you actually trying to undermine the other. Until this year, I didn't realize that was a thing. Now, that might just be because where I grew up, everybody watched everything, that it wasn't necessarily one or the other. Mark, I'm sure like ye probably spat in the grave of hurling.
It's been the grave. You wouldn't have, like sometimes, especially now I'm older, but I know when I was younger, it was just they're two different sports.
Yeah.
So like if there was hurling on, you just go outside and do something. Or you might end up watching it come to the Ireland final stage or the Ireland semi finals, but like it's the same as like saying, oh, I don't know, Friends is on, or Little House on the Prairie. I don't know, just go on and do something else with your day. Whereas now, obviously, with social media, it has to become some sort of hot take.
So hurling is like Little House on the Prairie to you, the people in Cavan. So it's not even that it's a different sport. It's not even a sport at all. We have we'll watch our Gaelic football and then we'll watch soccer. And then sure, look, if there's a rugby game on, we might leave it on. But you're hurling, you may as well be watching Neil Armstrong landing on the moon.
No. Well, of course, why wouldn't you watch Neil Armstrong landed on the moon? That was like a monumental moment in human history.
It's a repeat.
Is this live? Is it?
I didn't think he'd land on it again. I watched that Kian Mackey thing about four times on Sunday, and he kicked it wide every time at the end. I was sure of it Sunday night when we were out in the pub that he'd want to kick it over that time. But anyway, no, Little House on the Prairie used to be on Sundays, and I think it was on if there was no Sunday game, or it was on when you, like, mid-morning on a Sunday on RTE at some stage anyway.
Yeah, I remember that well. For me, it was always... I'm more with you, Morris, is that I don't understand it. Like, I grew up in a kind of a hurling house, but we watched everything. And, like, there's times of the year when soccer was the biggest thing. There's times of the year when it was rugby. And when the GA season got going on, we'd be as living and dying with the football the same way as we would be with the hurling. And I grew up with, like, you know, videotapes of the 70s Dublin and Kerry matches and everything like that. You know, it was always just it was a four-sport thing, plus the Olympics, plus horse racing, plus whatever else, you know. And I always find it very hard to understand that there's a constant need in this country. And I don't know whether it was always there and we just see it through Twitter, or whether everybody just needs to have their moan on Twitter now. But there's just this constant need to compare everything negatively to the thing that I like. You know, so it's like, I like this one thing, everything else is shit, and I'm going to tell everybody about it constantly until I fucking die.
Says Joe, at Joe Smith 42 from Skibbereen.
It just really annoys me, because there's a lot of things for sport to have to compete with without competing with each other, and especially under the same GAA umbrella. Like, there's lots of reasons that you can criticise RT, there's lots of reasons that you can criticise Sky Sports, and there's a lot of reasons that you can criticise the GAA. I just don't, like, we do them, you know, in terms of what, like, Cavan and Armagh absolutely should have been live on TV at the weekend, but there's also just a lot of, like... It's not really Hurling's fault that that's the case. And by the way, like, this isn't to say, like, that when the opposite was true, Hurling people weren't saying the same thing. It's not, I'm, again, not going one over the other. It's just what I've been hearing the last few days. And I think it's a bit needless.
Mark, I wonder, can you top that?
I've got 30 seconds as well, have I?
Yeah.
Unless Morris decides we're in for a
yeah,
a,
so that was definitely longer than 30 seconds.
But that's the judge of the judgment of the judge.
Three.
Count me in.
Two. One.
The GAA season ticket system. That's what I want to give out about. Now, I know it's a weird one, because it's hard to give out to people, because there's definitely headaches in organising all of this. But I have a GAA season ticket. Works grand during the National League. You use a card, it's like a bank card. This is going to take longer than 30 seconds. You use a bank card kind of thing, you know, one of them little things. You scan them in, get in grand. Then come the championship. It's a different system. They automatically charge you for a ticket. Now, they'll assign where it is. It's usually in the stand. So they charge you for a stand ticket ahead of time. You then have to log into your account, download that e-ticket, and then scan that ticket to get into the match. Two problems with that. One, if I'm a 60-year-old man...
You're out of time, but I'm also going to let you finish.
Right, if I'm a 60-year-old man, I don't know anything about e-tickets. I'm just going to show up, but this is a card I have. It's a GAA season ticket, let me in. Also, just even for me, what am I going to do? Go to Clonus with three or four friends and then go off on my own and sit in the stand. Clearly, we're going to want to go in together. Why can't I go into the terrace? Now, I got into the terrace with my season ticket on Sunday, but I was automatically charged €23 for a stand ticket, so I had to pay a fiver more than the rest of them had to pay to go to the terrace. I went into the season ticket turnstile and I showed them the thing, and they just went, it was, again, some man in his 60s behind a turnstile, didn't know what. Probably never heard of scanning tickets in his life. Just went, oh, go on. And in it went, didn't scan it.
This is the first match he's been to in 40 years.
The whole idea of scanning season tickets like that is that you have to, if you come to that Ireland final, when Cavan get to it, I'm going to have to be at 60% of Cavan's games to qualify for an Ireland final ticket. I went to the Cavan Monaghan game and the Cavan Armagh game, and neither time was my ticket scanned.
There's no proof.
I'm down as I haven't gone.
I think the...
It's a fair rant.
Yeah, it is. There's an interesting one though, right? Because the ticketing pricing I've been fascinated by this year, because this weekend it's cheaper to go to Cavan Armagh and Monaghan Fermanagh, that replay, than it is to go to Tyrone Donegal, because those...
Or than it is to go to Cavan Armagh 2 days ago.
Yeah, well, because there's been an age-old tradition of reducing the price of replays. Even though it's going to be a double header, they still have reduced the price of replays, which is more than fair. But let's say if you're from Kildare and you're forced to go to the... You're not forced to go. You choose to go to watch your county play the replay against Kildare Longford. Or if you're a young lad from the minor game, which was played beforehand, suddenly you've paid the exact same price again for that senior game, which is being replayed. Like, the fact that that isn't reduced down again is totally unfair, and especially in a week where for the Leinster Council not to reduce that replay tickets for the Kildare game.
Why did they not reduce them?
They just put because they didn't want to. The tickets were the same price for the Kildare Longford game as they were for the first game, and in a time when we've seen such focus on the Leinster Senior Council in terms of their gate receipts going down, for them not to take that kind of force, I think is a real shame.
Yeah, the season ticket pricing, or not, sorry, the general ticket pricing, I think, is a bit all over the place.
Right, that's enough whining for...
You haven't done yours.
He's too happy.
Yeah, that's why he gave us the extra time.
He was at Forbidden Fruit all weekend. He didn't have to see any GA. He hasn't been... he wasn't soaking up social media.
That's a season of whining done there.
It's all flowers and rainbows for...
Can I petition the bench for one extra?
No.
I don't even have to say it as a, it's more complaining about complaining again, but it's a slightly different thing.
I'll allow it.
Okay, this is in lieu of your one, right? We're all very reactionary at the moment. Everybody has their opinion, right? So it's like, Katie was robbed. I might not have seen the fight, but I read Ewan McKenna say it, so therefore I'm going to tweet about it all day and say that everyone who doesn't think it is an idiot. You know,
Katie robbed Persoon, you mean?
Sorry, yeah, exactly. The fight was fixed for Katie to win, right? Liverpool fans are unbearable if they win the Champions League. Like, I don't want them to win because they'll be unbearable and we'll never hear the end of it. The only thing I'm not hearing the end of it is you saying that. Orty are a disgrace for showing hurling over football, for everything they've ever done in the world. Hurling is shit, and that's what I just, you know, and there's no nuance or anything to it at all. I'm slightly bringing it back to the GA, but it's just this... reacting to one weekend like it's the definitive thing in the world, and also reacting to something that you don't know anything about. So someone that didn't see the match, didn't see the fight, didn't see Liverpool fans be unbearable in inverted commas, always just have to have their opinion about it, spout it out, and I'm sick of listening to it.
Game of Thrones, Ghost, perfect example.
Oh my God, Game of Thrones, the best example. But you could
Ghost specifically, because everybody went nuts that, oh, they got rid of Ghost and they didn't even pat him goodbye. And then two episodes later, he was back in it again. It was like, if you just wait a while.
Yeah, but they were still unhappy because he wouldn't have done it in the first place. Anyway, I just think as, and look, I'm not saying that everybody in this room, mainly me, couldn't learn a little bit from my complaining here. But I just think if we all just took a breath every now and then and let things play out a little bit, we'd all be a lot happier.
Fully agreed.
Nobody counted us in all year. The media.
Where did this ferocious determination out there today come from?
Lads, to continue this team of non-stop complaining, I'm going to refer you to Anthony Daly's column in the Irish Examiner. This is a really interesting column, but one line in particular I thought was brilliant. So this is Daly talking about the Clare game at the weekend. To be honest, I'm sick of listening to managers and pundits about systems, and that includes the present Clare management. I understand all that stuff, but it drives me demented when teams are leaning on them too heavily. Tacklers have a place, but there have to be middle ground too, where you can fight and go to war with the opposition. I think that's a really interesting idea, right? Because, like, there's two kind of strains of thought to this. There's people who think overly about systems and structures and the development of analytics and things like that in the game, which I'd actually be more subscribed to than a lot of other people. Then there's people who just think you go out and you play and you beat your man and let it in and you go home and have 10 points that night and everything will be happy. But there is actually a middle ground within the two where you actually get players locked into a system as in now and not the ability to actually think. So I'll just, one quick example I've mentioned before on this podcast, but I'll never forget it. It was Carlo playing Leash and persistent with a kick-out strategy that clearly wasn't working, kicking the ball out in the Leinster semi-final last year on top of John O'Loughlin, who cleaned up every single ball. They lost 8 kick-outs in a row that day until Stephen Porter ran into the field to whisper in the Carlo goalkeeper's ear, and what would you know it, he kicked short for the next one. Like, why does it take a coach to do that? There should be some sort of flexibility. In
Cork losing the tip first game of this year, their tactic of hitting the puck out to Brendan Maher every single
time
was
unbelievable, right on top of him. Yeah, I think that's what Daly is getting at there, is that the lack of kind of variance in what you're kind of doing, or versatility as well in players, like players being actually able to think. And I think the best example of that, Mick, was Clare at the weekends, not to dwell on this too, but Clare and Waterford particularly were so like ingrained what they normally think works and what will do, and their inability to be any way flexible was kind of glaring.
I think both of them were the same. I think Waterford might even be a better example, but it's funny that it is across everything. As Mark mentioned it, I nearly wanted to jump on it a few minutes ago when you mentioned Cavan. It was like, maybe just kick it in once and see what happens. But you see, the problem is there, you have a design set to play and the players aren't allowed to make these decisions for themselves. Or maybe they're allowed but they feel like they're not, and they just don't. They have to feel like they have to go through the motions. And there's no room for the bit of genius then. There's no room for that little moment that might happen outside of the structure and what the coaching is. And Clare, like, let's start with Waterford actually, right? Waterford was one of the most banana, like, even their tactics for what they were, if they stuck to them, didn't make any sense. Because they played a sweeper, man back, played two up front against four Limerick defenders, but their tactic was to hit the ball in as long as they possibly can all the time. I mean, a couple of Stephen O'Keefe's puckouts went to the other goalkeeper. Like, they were just whacking it, like, you know? And I don't know what they were trying, and it didn't make any sense, right, at all. And they never dropped the sweeper. And Limerick adapted to, you know, Tadhg DeBurca standing in front of Aaron Galan, and they took pot shots, and they brought Keane Lynch out, and they were playing 1-2s, and they just knew how to play it. Tip knew how to play against Clare's sweeper. Again, Clare didn't react. I'll tell you another thing is, like, the difference, you know, in the systems, right? Tipperary had just as many tactics, in inverted commas, as Clare, right? They knew exactly what they were doing, but it was a game plan. It wasn't this kind of, like, we have to play a certain way. They said, like, the two or three players are going to take Clare's best players out of the game, and this is how we're going to deal, especially with Clare's puckouts, rather necessarily than their own. And then everything after that was just hurling. That's what you need. You need that kind of thing of, like, here's how we're going to counteract this. Here's how we're going to attack this particular phase of play. And here, and you've been coached to do that, and you know what to do. And here's how we're, and we're going to run around. But then when you get the ball in your hand, put it over the bar, or give a pass inside, or do whatever, you know. But, like, you're hurlers. You know how to play the game. You've been doing it all your life.
That's a really interesting point, actually. We might play. This is our own PJ Brown caught up with Owen Murphy, the Kilkenny goalkeeper, this week. And this is his take on what he saw last weekend and the kind of culture about trying to learn from games as you go.
Yeah, for myself, yeah, you obviously want to see the way that they're setting up for their own puckouts, because I suppose you're trying to orchestrate the backs the way you want to be set up and try to counteract that, like, you know, and obviously then how they set up on the opposition puckouts. But then, you know, the way tactics are in the game now, they change for each game, like, so you can't read into it too much. And you say you take certain clips of it, obviously, to see how they're trying to set up. But look, at the end of the day, if you're set up right and, you know, you're performing well to your own ability, and, you know, even at both ends of the field, if you're clinical, being defensive, making those dispossessions or blocks or whatever it is, and then at the other end of the field, if you can get, you know, bust your backside to get to that break and, you know, get a score that sort of lifts the whole morale of the team, like, you know, that's what you're trying to look for. You're trying to look for those extra bit of edges. But at the end of the day, like, it's a, like, hurling is a simple game. Like, you know, and if teams are playing with the sweeper, you just have to use your mind to play around that. And it's not a case of that you come up with this big massive game plan, like, to counteract that. And, you know, if, you know, you take Tip there the weekend, they weren't playing with a spare man, they played 15 on 15, and I know Park Maher was left as Tip's spare man, or Ronan Maher either, at different occasions throughout the game. But, you know, they were just, you know, their forwards just worked a lot harder than what Clare did on the day, and that's how they got the result. Similar enough with Limerick and Waterford, you know, they just worked that bit harder. So, you know, the team that works harder generally will, you know, won't be too far away from result if they can be anyway clinical.
Would you call yourself, like, a hurling nerd?
I would.
Fairly in depth.
No, I wouldn't say that. Like, but it'd be, you know, you'd obviously have a massive interest in terms of how the whole setup works. And even now, when you're coaching young lads and different things, you're trying to tell them maybe a couple of things that you've seen along the way and stuff, and that will try to develop them into be better players and, you know, better thinkers of the game as well. Like, but it's constantly evolving. Like, so you can't in any way stay static. You know, so, like, if you're going to be left behind in terms of, look, your strength condition, whatever it is, like, you know, it could take years for the whole inter-county setup to build it back up to what it should be, like, you know. So you have to constantly evolve, and but, like, the first thing is how you approach training. And
so that's Owen Murphy there, not quite a hurling nerd, but pretty close to it, as he said there. That full interview will be up on Boz.ie. You can read that this week. Just on what he said there, like, Kilkenny people, a lot of them would lead you to believe that they've got absolutely no tactics, and they would be happy. They would be totally happy to let you know. But I still think it's interesting that, you know, he talked about watching games and what you can learn from. But that little variance, like, ultimately, that stuff, it goes back to, if you take a rugby, for example, for a second, like, New Zealand, so much of their coaching is based off, you know, KISS, like, keep it super simple, and it's kind of skill set based stuff. So it's, you know, you can adapt to whatever the platform is itself. And I think that's a lot of Kilkenny's kind of hurling culture is based off that as well. Like, the fact that, and that's embodied by somebody like Brian Cody.
But what's, like, yeah, you're 100% right. And they coached them to do a certain thing. It just happens to be more, what's the word, traditional, I suppose, than some of the things we see. Like, tactics is a dirty word in hurling, but tactics is only used to describe short puckouts or short passing or playing a sweeper. They're the only three things that is. There's everything
sort of
else
working around the middle third now, kind of Limerick thing that every so many different counties are taking on, where it's like
shots from
flooding
yards,
the middle third.
Yeah,
and the sort of, but it, again, it's that's tactics in the madness of a breaking ball in Ireland.
Yeah, The real systems allow you to adapt to the madness of the breaking ball. And I think what Tipperary did, again, is no less tactics than any other team, but that it was targeted. And as I said, like, the best example, and people will have seen this, was on Donal Tooney's puckouts. It was, they were leaving a man, especially in the first half against the Breeze, free in the centre of the field. An easy target. Tooney couldn't resist it and hit it straight down, but then would converge on top of him from all angles. And more often than not, a Clare player got himself in trouble, and it led to a couple of direct scores from Tipperary. It led to another couple of indirect scores, and that's the difference between the teams at half-time, you know? Now, what the other side of what Daly is saying there is, like, what do Clare do to adapt to that? That's a tactic that isn't working. That happens. There's nothing... You can't hang a manager for a tactic not being the perfect
successful
idea.
Yeah.
It's just that, why is Donald Toohey, who's played in goal for Clare for 5-6 years now, not able to say, this isn't working? Why is the wing forwards not to say, right, we'll put it down on top of Peter Duggan, the tallest forward in Ireland nearly, you know, from playing at wing forward, we'll hit a few puckouts down on top of him and see if that goes. But there's nobody thinking that way. They don't do it. And even all the way through the second half, it's indicative of them not bringing the sweeper, not neither team, Waterford or Clare, losing the sweeper as the game went on, as they're losing by, Waterford lost by 20 points, like, you know, Clare weren't too far behind, and they didn't change it, and it doesn't make any sense to me. It doesn't make any sense how Paddy Maher was still sweeping up, like, from long Clare balls that were left 20 yards too short from their target, you know, as the game was over. And they didn't go out fighting, you know, and that's because, I don't know, it's just some sort of paralysis that exists there because of these overarching tactics. So I think what Daly's saying is 100% right. He's like, you do need to have a tactical approach to the game. You do need to know, you do need to have a discussion about how you're going to go out and win this game, how you're going to win possession, how you're going to use possession, and how you're going to win it back, right? But it doesn't need to be the only thing that's in your head. You need to be able to go out and have a little bit of freedom as well.
And even, you know, like, in a more general sense, I remember I was at a coaching conference last year with somebody who's actually involved in an intercounty team now. And he was, one of the things he stressed most of all was that, you know, don't just worry about what you're actually doing. Worry about the time that you're dedicating to each skill. So, like, if you're spending half your session, 30 minutes, working off, you know, like, your sideline routines or your three-man weaves, like, in the lieu of this name's podcast, how much of your actual time is going to be taken up in that sort of stuff within the actual game? Like, 5%, maybe 10%. But how much the rest of it? Like, 90% of stuff is going to be kicking, tackling. Like, you get a ball, you can only do two things with it. You can pass it or you can run with it. You can't do anything else. So why isn't that the stuff that you prioritise? And that obviously influences tactics. Like, there's people, you look at Cork and Kerry at the weekend, both of them played. James O'Donoghue did the job for Kerry. Roy Dean did it for Cork. That link man role on the edge of the square. Like, they're two skill set based players. They're not doing that within, they're doing it within an overall system, but they're doing it also because it suits their skill set and that's easily to adapt. Like, if James O'Donoghue isn't doing that role, Stephen O'Brien might do it, or even Gainey might do it. Clifford came out and did it in the league on that role. But it's flexible within that and that suits their skill set. And then you've got players on the inside. It's like Cork and Kerry with easy wins at the weekend. Hurley is that player. Like, he's the guy who's perfectly suited for that system, but with his own skill set to play on the inside, and that suits them perfectly. So, and that's like, that's why that Munster final, the thing, both those teams in similar ways have really good attacking kind of structures, and Cork have always had great forwards. It's everything around that's been such a problem. Simultaneously, Kerry in the same way, but like those things, I suppose, to try to get a happy marriage between them all.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that in terms of the time you dedicate to everything, because I always find that strange. It would, like, say Gaelic football training, where, and like, club teams probably suffer from this more than anyone because of numbers simply, where so much of your training sessions are, any game situation is usually over and back the field or in these small, you'll see them in warm-ups and county games as well, where it's like the slalom sticks as goals or whatever. They're all hand-passing games. And it's like, if every game you play in training is a hand-passing game, or at least a game that the pitch is so small that you can't really kick, there's no point in kicking it, then of course, when you go out into a football, to proper football, full field game, you're kick passing. Even if you're doing drills, it's not that situational kind of thing that your kick passing won't be up to scratch.
Yeah. I was thinking actually all the way through when you were talking there about like Seamus Callanan watching a ball hitting off the post, catching it and burying it into the back of the net all in a split second, and you're never thinking for a second he was going to miss it. Like, that's the kind of thing that comes from him being a natural player, playing millions of games
exactly.
in training and all through his life. And there isn't any training drill in the world that's going to make him better at that. Now, I know, I'm not saying they're all irrelevant, but they're definitely overemphasized.
Yeah, like even the cornerback thing again of playing, you know, you're marking a man, sometimes you just need time on him to figure him out, and sometimes that isn't, you know, it's not a drill. It's like there will be things that will help your strength and condition or whatever, but sometimes it's like, well, I'm in a problem here. This lad's after getting, if it's like, say, James Morgan and Jeremy V, but say it's Jamie Clark and training or whatever, it's like, I can't foul him every time he gets it. What am I going to do here? He's so fast. Do I go out in front? Do I go behind? Do I go left? Do I go right? And sometimes that's just game situations.
Yeah, playing a few games.
Yeah, look at Cavan. It was a big weekend, it said. I was very excited, obviously. Yeah, look at. Because I feel like we've gone a good, it must be a good 10 minutes out of bringing up Cavan. Cavan. Live music and people there on the floor. Yeah, look at. I believe my phrase was, mark my words, Cavan will not be bet on Sunday. And then they were bet.
Right, lads, we're nearly out of time. The other games of the weekend, obviously Kildare 118, Longford not 10. Dublin bet Carlo, unfortunately for us, and then probably one of the biggest games of the weekend. Big Carlo fans.
Are we anti-Dublin hurling in this?
and the other game was Antrim 3-23, Offaly 4-18. Yeah. So what that means is that it's now out of Offaly's hands in terms of their future for the John McDonagh Cup. So they cancel.
Are you sure? If they don't beat Kerry... And Kerry, oh, so it's out of their hands because if Kerry beat Leash.
Yeah, because yeah. Kerry still have two games to play. So, yeah. Like, Kerry were able to go and beat Westmead, something that Offaly couldn't do. You'd wonder what would happen in terms of them playing against Leash. Yeah. If not, it is still head-to-head. So if they need Kerry to lose two games and beat them head-to-head for them to not go down to the Christy Ring Cup, but it's looking pretty bleak there.
Yeah, I mentioned on Friday briefly that it was exactly 30 years since Antrim beat them, 1989 semi-final, probably the biggest shock in Croke Park history. And when you just think that Antrim hurling has, we've done feature after feature and how much it's fallen off a cliff since then, nothing has really improved. Hopefully it is turning the corner, but the fact that now they've passed out Offaly while on a slide themselves just shows you how far Offaly have actually fallen in real terms.
I think it's so weird as well when you look at, like, you're looking for some kind of silver lining for Offaly, and we've talked before about maybe a couple of, like, young Oisin Kelly hit 2-2 at the weekend, the guy who I've obviously been a huge fan of, but then you look beyond that and, like, a guy like Joe Bergen is having to score 1-6 and they're still losing. Like, the, in terms of what actually is there, it does not look good.
Nope. Hope people were listening though to our preview show where we tipped that Offaly were 3 points favourites. Antrim was great.
Yeah, it was great.
Mark actually was on fire.
Yeah, and then forgot that the game started at 3 and not 5 on Saturday and never backed it.
Right, any other closing business before we head?
I want to talk very briefly about, I'm going to ring, guess what, Cavan Armagh. No, but just, there's some great lines you hear in the crowd at these certain games, and there's one at the weekend where Cavan, like we're saying, were playing outside the Armagh blanket defence, weren't given, going to give the ball away, and they've been passing around for a couple of minutes, and I could hear two red lads behind me going, ah, Jesus, now this is cat. Ah, no, we may find a new hobby. And then everyone's like, aye, and we may buy a fishing rod. So I want to hear, we should do a piece of it, but I want to hear anyone that's listening or going to any games over the next few weeks, if you hear anything, make sure to tweet us at balls.ie or send it an email to thegaffer@balls.ie, because we'll bring them up on the show. We definitely should put a piece together on some of the best ones heard around, overheard at GAA matches around the country.
Definitely. And look, sure, we could add a bit of a Twitter into that, because I saw one, you know, talking about Armagh were thinking about making a complaint about the referee.
Was that Brendan Donaghy? They're appealing the Brendan Donaghy red card.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And a Cavan supporter replied back with, have they got Stevie Wonder advising them, I wonder? Which I was saying to Mark when I saw it, is the most GAA response, the most universal GAA response that I've ever heard in my life, because I can see myself in a pub with a lot of friends who watch GAA and it would be their exact response, and they would think they were hilarious.
Or there was a woman on BBC after the game, the other BBC interview people coming out of the stadium, and it's like the most Cavan, like, it's every, I haven't gone to a game nearly where someone has to come out, which is like, ah, oh, Jesus, very bad stuff. Oh, I'd have been better myself.
Oh, yeah. I've one last piece of business. I've been very negative on this show, and I'd like to apologize to the listeners. Look, you know, I'll regroup. no matter what happens in Clare and Limerick next week, I vow to come on next Monday with a little bit more cheer in my voice. I will also say that for all my negativity about Clare's performance, I think it's much justified. I'm not the greatest fan personally of Tip, but they were brilliant, and I think that's worth talking about. It doesn't always have to be about the team who were trounced. Sometimes it's about the team who did the trouncing, and the performances of all their forwards. Bonner Maher back to his best. Noel McGrath, for me, is every time I watch him, he's eking up in my estimation as one of the best hurlers I've ever seen. Callanan, John McGrath, Bubbles, everyone, absolutely brilliant. It sickens me to say.
That's a nice kind of mixed positive note to end this podcast.
That's what I was thinking. He's like, he finishes on a positive note with the last sentence being
double barrels it with a negative note.
Apologies again.
We'll be back at the end of the week with our preview show. In the meantime, take it easy.